Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramay.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here, welcoming you back to the show this week. And here we go again, race one in the books. Austrian Grand Prix, of course, went down last weekend. As I sit here in the last few hours, the waning hours of Thursday, July 9th, 2020, we are now just a couple of days away from race number two, the Styrian Grand Prix. And more importantly, we're only about 3.5 hours away from FP1. And it's certainly going to be very interesting to see what with back-to-back races on back-to-back weekends at the same circuit, who's learned what, who's improved, or what's this race going to have in store for us. I think that really is going to be the big interesting thing to watch, because it was fun. I really enjoyed the race last weekend, and I don't think that was purely just because of the fact that it's been several months beyond the very first planned Grand Prix of 2020 and all the horrible, nasty, and strange things that have happened in the past several months, and everything, the continued problems that we're seeing around the world with the coronavirus. But it was, of course, great to get back to racing this past weekend. And of course, the enforced layoffs and all the things that have gone on in Formula One really lent to some of the chaos on the track in a good way. I mean, reliability was a big factor. You know, it was strange, you know, to watch the cars going around the circuit with obviously no people there, but still, from a TV point of view, I thought for my part, I think it worked. It was also a bit strange to see an obvious lack of people in and around the facility. I think more so when you see like some of the overhead pictures, and you don't see lots of people in the areas behind the pits. Obviously, in the pits itself, it people the numbers of people at the facility restricted for obvious reasons. This bubble for coronavirus and all that. But the spectacle itself, the race itself, I think it worked very well. And just with all the drama with the reliability in cars or lack thereof, and some of the issue that the guys were having during the race, the safety cars, different strategies and stuff like that, I think it all made for a very enjoyable race. And certainly there was no lack of drama. But let's just go over quickly to recap what happened in the race last weekend. If you want to go back, I can get the race recap, just go back in the feed, because I did do the post-race show immediately after the race was over, ran down into the studio and just got it right off and out into available to listen to. So we're not going to really talk too much specifically about the race itself. We're going to touch on some of the stories and some of the events that happened, and why wouldn't we? This Albon Hamilton, it's starting to become a thing between these two guys, and Toto Wolff saying that the gloves are off between Mercedes and Red Bull. So there's a bit of bad blood brewing there. And I think that could make for some good things on the track. Anyways, usually in this situation, I would go back and maybe do the top five or top 10 guys that finished this race. Last year at the 2019 Austrian Grand Prix, we didn't have a single retirement for any reason, for a crash, reliability. All 20 cars started, did the 71 laps, and finished. This past weekend, however, we lost 9 cars. The very last one Alex Albon. Sorry, no, it was Danny Kvyat, just 2 laps from the end. But it seemed guys were dropping out every couple of laps towards the end there. Anyways, the top 10 were Valtteri Bottas winning it for Mercedes, Charles Leclerc and Ferrari, Lando Norris, the youngster, getting P3 in his first podium for McLaren. That was great to see. Lewis Hamilton, after the 5-second penalty that was awarded to him for the coming together he had with Alex Albon, dropped down to fourth. Carlos Sainz rounding out the top five, and 2 McLarens in the top five. Great results for them. Very good weekend for McLaren in Austria last week. Another car, another driver strong showing was Sergio Perez. I think there's obviously something to this RP20. The pink Mercedes looked pretty good. Pierre Gasly, P7 in the AlphaTauri Honda. Esteban Ocon, I should say, in the Renault. P9 was Antonio Giovinazzi. P10 was Sebastian Vettel, who dropped way down in the race order after that coming together he had with Carlos Sainz at turn three. And then Nicholas Latifi in the sole surviving Mercedes, and the young Canadian coming home in P11 just missed out on the points in his Formula One debut. But certainly that was a race that had its fair share of drama, and certainly a couple of big talking points there was the penalty that was awarded to Hamilton on the in the hours preceding the Grand Prix. Red Bull launching a protest that Hamilton was did not slow after the yellows were waved during qualifying after Bottas messed it up on his final hot lap in Q3, went onto the grass, and Lewis on his hot lap as well right at the very end there, trying to charge down and take a provisional pole away from his teammate. That didn't work out. And then, of course, later on in the race, Alex Albon and Lewis Hamilton coming together at just on the end of turn four, and Alex Albon ending up in the gravel. And Alex, he said that that accident cost him an opportunity to win that race. And considering that the two Mercedes cars were on older hard compound tires, and basically everybody else except for Sergio Perez went in during the safety cars, at least one of those safety car periods, to change for softer, fresher rubber, I think he absolutely has a point. He certainly was had plenty of pace on Lewis Hamilton. I guess you could maybe make the argument that Alex maybe should have bided his time a little bit more, but I guess he wanted to strike before before things settled down and the race got back into a rhythm. And certainly he was climbing all over the back of Lewis Hamilton's gearbox all the way around after the restart, around that first half of the lap. Unfortunately, that worked out, but certainly a lot of bad blood brewing between Mercedes and Red Bull, and could set up some nice intense rivalries on the track. But you just have to know that that weekend was obviously very, very frustrating for Lewis Hamilton. Not only the multiple penalties that they had to face, there was also the issue that they had with the car, and then losing out points to his teammate. And Lewis doesn't take those things very good. Well, I mean, he deals with it professionally, but I always get the impression that he gets severely unhappy and dissatisfied with when things do not go the way that they should in his mind. So I would expect to see Lewis come back with a chip on his shoulder for this weekend. And I don't know what to make with some of the reports that have been going around for the past couple of days that the title this year is going to be between Lewis Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas. I think it's far too early to say. Obviously, we're not going to have the 22 races for the entire season to sort it out. So it might be a sprint rather than a marathon, but I don't know. I think it's a little bit too early to say whether or not it's going to be between those two guys. And if things, if Lewis gets into his groove, gets into that rhythm, I really don't know if Valtteri Bottas can mention him. I mean, it's far too early to say as well. I mean, last year, Bottas came out very strong in the opening race in Australia, but then once Lewis hit his stride, he was just racking up the points and the wins all the time, and he shortly asserted himself at the top of the world championship, and it really was a question of when and not if Lewis was going to win the title in 2019. Anyways, let's get into the news. And of course, there are plenty of things to talk about. First off, Mercedes and Ferrari are set to get a warning for breaching the coronavirus protocols that have been implemented by Formula One in this bubble, and this the whole safety thing that they have to prevent the spread of COVID-19 within the Formula One paddock. Anyways, what happened and was after the race last weekend. Valtteri Bottas and Charles Leclerc returned home to Monaco after the Grand Prix. But the code of conduct does not prevent people attending the Formula One events to travel away from the venues between the races, but it is very strict about them staying within their own, quote, social bubbles and not mixing beyond them. Bottas was then posting on social media about enjoying some time out in Monaco, and then Charles Leclerc was posting on his Twitter, Instagram, whatever it was, that he was out taking pictures with friends and fans, and there was one picture in particular where Charles did not have a mask on or anything like that. So anyway, so the FIA did take a little bit of an examination or investigation in what went on, and they will be in touch with both of the drivers' teams to remind them that they need to strictly follow the code of conduct that they put in place to all the attendees for the for the two races in Austria. So, I mean, considering what's at stake, and that all the teams have worked very hard to ensure that things stay, like everybody stays healthy, and that they can keep COVID out of the paddock during these races. Even if they return home, if that's permitted, I'm sure that they have a more. I think that they would be traveling in different ways than you or I would. And to ask them over the course of what's probably going to be a very short Formula One season, to ask them and expect them to stay away from doing these sorts of things doesn't seem like an unreasonable ask. I mean, especially what they're being paid and contracted to do by their teams. It doesn't seem like it should be all that difficult to stay away from too many people and stuff like that over the next weeks and months. Anyways, moving along, the big news this year: Fernando Alonso. Remember that guy? Yes, won two world championships with Renault back in 2005 and 2006. Spent some time at McLaren, another little team that you might have heard of called Ferrari. Then back to McLaren, and then out of Formula One, wins Le Mans a couple of times, gives Indy a shot a couple of times, does very good in his debut. Anyways, remember that guy? Of course you do. Anyways, big news this week: Fernando Alonso signing a 2-year deal with Renault for 2021 and 2022. And honestly, I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised in equal measures. And well, let's be fair. I mean, Fernando, although an extremely talented driver, has ruffled some feathers during his time in Formula One. And that's just the way it is. Fernando just is the way that Fernando is. And when he left Formula One after his time, second stint with McLaren, it was always interesting because he always said that, I take a look at the way things are going in a couple of years, specifically looking at 2021 when the new regulations, which are now obviously delayed until 2022 because of COVID. It was interesting because he would always say that he was looking towards that, and if he was going to decide to come back to Formula One. And it always seemed to me that it was a very sure thing in Fernando's mind. And I was always wondering, well, especially last year when you saw at McLaren how well Sainz and Lando Norris did, that it didn't really, to my mind, make a lot of sense to disrupt that partnership if those two guys were still together at the end of 2020, if they had another good year. However, that obviously didn't come to pass, and you could see that maybe there was still a relationship with Renault, but I didn't really get the feeling that he parted ways badly with McLaren, that there was anything there at all. Quite the opposite, in fact. But anyways, Fernando coming back on a 2-year deal to Renault to give Formula One another shot. He's going to be partnering Esteban Ocon, who had his Renault debut last weekend. Not a really lights out performance for him, but of course, first race of the year, first race back in Formula One in a couple of years for Esteban. And of course, with all the weirdness and everything that's gone on the past couple of months, maybe a little bit too soon to expect something. I mean, I think he's a very good driver. I think he's obviously Formula One quality. I think he's going to need a little bit of time just to really find his place in Formula One. I mean, he's still fairly young, right? I think that Esteban is going to need a little bit of time to grow into Formula One and mature a little bit. And certainly having a teammate like Fernando Alonso is going to do a lot for him. But yeah, like I say, I think that it surprised me that he came back so soon. And well, obviously that what seemed to be, at least in Fernando's mind, a little bit of a sure thing, or maybe something that was a certainty, there's obviously something to that. So we'll see how he does in his return to Renault next year. They've already said that they're not planning any in-season tests for him this year at all. So it'll be basically a fresh start for Fernando in 2021. Anyways, time for a break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Sticking with the big news of Fernando Alonso, one of the reasons that he said he was going to come back with Renault for those 2 years in 21 and 22 is he says that by doing so, it gives him the biggest chance to return to the highest level. And of course, like I said earlier, and this is obviously common knowledge, Fernando won his only two world championships with said team, Renault, back in 2005 and 2006, and this is actually his third stint with Renault. And Fernando, of course, has not been in Formula One since the end of 2018, so he's going to miss two full seasons. Anyways, he did have the following to say, and this is a Fernando quote: "It is a great source of pride, and with an immense emotion, I'm returning to the team that gave me my chance at the start of my career, and which now gives me the opportunity to return to the highest level. I have principles and ambitions in lines with the team's project. Progress this winter gives credibility to the objectives for the 2022 season. I will share all my racing experience with everyone from the engineers to the mechanics and my teammates. The team wants and has the means to get back on the podium, as do I," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, it is very interesting just to see how everything has shifted around in the past couple of months. Obviously, Renault at this moment is not one of the top teams, but just kind of going back a couple of months ago, well, more than a couple of months ago, going back to last winter, and just a lot of the speculation at that time that when it was all said and done, that it was going to be status quo at the top three teams. You were going to see Leclerc and Vettel at Ferrari, Hamilton and Bottas at Mercedes, and then Verstappen and Albon at Red Bull. So there's still a lot of question marks there. There's nothing has been formally announced for what's going to happen to Mercedes next year. Bottas on a 1 year deal, Hamilton, in the last year of his contract there. You know, no word on how that's going. There's a bit of a hint, which we'll get to in a little bit here. So, yeah, we'll see how that all works out. But still, I mean, the way that things really have shifted around, I mean, it made sense for Ferrari and Red Bull to lock down guys like Leclerc and Verstappen. But then when you had that, you know, really shocking announcement that Vettel was not going to come back to Ferrari for next year, I didn't expect he'd stay there for long term, but I thought he might get a one-year extension or something like that. Anyways, well, with him leaving and now Sainz going to Ferrari for next year, obviously there was you know, the opportunity that maybe Renault would be a possible landing spot for Sebastian Vettel. I mean, that's just speculation in a lot of people's mind, but obviously what with Fernando going there for the next couple of years, that one is gone because, you know, Esteban Ocon is still there. So who knows what's happening at Mercedes? Nobody knows. Bottas had said in the media a couple of weeks ago he doesn't expect that's going to happen, and he's been told that Vettel will not go there. Red Bull, you know, Christian Horner said a couple of weeks ago that they couldn't afford to pay, or they didn't really have the means to pay out a huge salary that perhaps that Vettel might want. So it is very interesting, and Alonso coming back, like I said, it is a surprise, but it isn't in equal measures. And the only thing that that I have is, you know, how is Fernando going to fit into the team? Because like I say, I mean, he's ruffled some feathers during his time in Formula One over the years. Anyways, according to Renault team boss Cyril Abiteboul, he believes that that Fernando is a totally different person and a totally different character. And Abiteboul said in an interview with Motorsport.com this week, quote, "I think that the years he has had away from the track have probably been an opportunity for him to reset, to actually measure how lucky or privileged we all are of us to operate and perform in Formula One, and probably come with a fresh set of mind. Let's not forget how the competition, it can be toxic on people, on individuals, you know, no matter how hard you try or how hard you work, you can't win. And it's the sport that is doing that. I'm not surprised that as a sport that's had, is creating this type of situation and therefore legacy, but it's also why he was so interested in this new profile for the sport and maybe the opportunity to bring in a new Fernando into F1. End quote. So very interesting. And I guess too, you know, having that opportunity to be away from Formula One for a couple of years and try some different things. And like I say, I mean, he never really shut the door completely on Formula One. Some of us may have been a little bit skeptical at the time after that last race in 2018 that we'd ever see Fernando Alonso back in a Formula One car. So it is going to be a very interesting situation to watch over the next couple of years. It's obviously an in-between year for everybody this year, not just Renault, for a multi, you know, many reasons. I mean, you've got Carlos Sainz moving to Ferrari from McLaren. You got Ricciardo going to McLaren, leaving Renault, and so there's a lot of things going on. But you can tell that Fernando obviously eager to get in, because apparently he's already been messaging his new teammate Esteban Ocon about the plans for next year. You have to think, if you're a young guy like Esteban Ocon, who has talent, who wants to make his mark in Formula One and be a good driver, you must really be looking forward to the opportunity to work with a guy like Fernando Alonso. So of course, when it comes to race day, you're going to want to get the best results that you can. But you know, for an opportunity to work with a guy that's still obviously very fast in a racing car, who's you know, won races in the past, who's won world championships, that you'd be you know, watering at the mouth to do so. Anyways, Esteban had to say, quote, "He's very, very motivated. I had him on the text yesterday, and he's very keen to come back. We just chatted about the opportunity there is in the next years and how the field is close at the moment. I think there's a good chance of doing well if we work well together," end quote. So that is obviously a very interesting take as well. And we did see how tight things were. I mean, you look at this past weekend, just some of the teams that were up there. Of course, attrition had a lot to do with it in the race last week in Austria, but still, there, you know, lots of things going on. And we'll see this week and in the races to come how this, you know, the running order, the pecking order in Formula One kind of settles down. Anyways, Esteban did have to go on and say, quote, "So far, what I know is Fernando is a very cool guy. I know we've chatted a lot of times when he was on the track, and we also had quite a few text messages before he came, but now he's very keen to come back. He is very keen to make the project move forward. He's very aware of what we need to do and what the chances are. And, you know, I'm pretty sure we can have a great collaboration together," end quote. So, yeah, I mean, again, Renault, this is a team that's done it before, won world championships, both as a constructor and as an engine supplier. And they have been a bit of a frustrating team to watch over the past couple of years since they came back and revived Lotus and became a manufacturer, a team in their own right. They just have kind of petered out a little bit. And it's been, like I say, a little bit frustrating to watch, and hopefully getting, you know, changing things up away in a good way, I should say, what with Ricardo leaving and Alonso coming back. Not that, you know, Ricardo's a drain or a negative influence on the situation at the moment, but certainly I think that a guy with the stature, I guess you could say, of Fernando Alonso must really be exciting people there. And it'll be interesting to see how that influence that Fernando has coming back, and see if that how that motivates them to push them forward. Because I mean, Renault is a big company. I mean, they have the financial means to do well. They've in the past been able to do well. And I'm just interested to see how that's going to translate when it comes to improving their car, because they've kind of stagnated over the past couple of years. I mean, they said it was going to take them several years to get back on track to the point where they'd be competing for podiums, and that hasn't happened yet. And even before this season got going, Abita Boul was even saying that these podiums probably aren't going to happen next year. So they're going to have to make a bit of a quantum leap forward over the next 18 to 24 months to do so, to be in that position to challenge for podiums either next year or definitely in 2022 when the new regs come in. And certainly that's going to be the, you know, the one benchmark or milestone that they're going to be looking for to try and get to podiums when Fernando is on the team. All right. Well, despite the fact that Alonso's coming back for 2 years, for 2021 and 2022, Abita Boul says that their F1 Academy at Renault is still a thing. They're still very serious about it. And he said it's not a lack of interest or loyalty to their young driver program. I mean, they've got some good drivers. If you're watching the F2 races last weekend, I mean, you got Guan Yu Zhou and Christian Lundegaard, and they're both racing in F2 this year. And Abita Boul did say that the original plan was potentially to move one of them into F1 as early as next year. Obviously, with you get a guy with the stature and I guess the influence of Fernando Alonso does change that up a little bit. But certainly what I saw from Zhou, especially last weekend, and I don't really follow F2 all that close. I'd like to, but in normal times when, you know, we're not, you know, sheltering in place because of pandemics, I don't really get a lot of time left over to watch Formula 2. But certainly what I saw last week, especially in the sprint race, that was really good. The opening lap was really quite exciting to watch, especially from Zhou. So also, we'll have to see going forward, especially now. I mean, for those guys, might be a little bit frustrating thinking, okay, well, one of us might have had a shot to get into that car in 21, and now at the very earliest, unless something changes, that's going to be delayed a couple of years, that perhaps one of us won't get into a Renault at least until 2023. Anyways, let's talk now about some of the drama that went on this past weekend. So Christian Horner says that social media prompted the what eventually became a protest for Lewis Hamilton's inability, but his lack of reaction to slow to the yellow flags on his final qualifying lap. And they did request a review of that infringement after they were prompted by what they call intrigue on social media. So they did push the FIA and the stewards just the hours before the Grand Prix to review the stewards' decision from Saturday not to punish Hamilton for ignoring the yellow flags in that final qualifying lap in in Q3. And at the time, the stewards decided after speaking to Lewis that the confusion over the yellow flags and the green flags and all that, they felt that there was no infraction that that took place, and they decided that they didn't need to penalize him. Anyways, there was an official 360-degree video released by Formula One that came out later on Saturday night, and it highlighted that Hamilton had clearly passed one of the yellow flashing signboards before he saw the green flags, and there was a lot of discussion on social media, and then Christian Horner said that it was pointed out to them on social media, and there was this different 360 camera angle that did show that Lewis was still going flat out through the yellow light box, and seemed that it was inconsistent to what happened with Max Verstappen, who was punished in Mexico that one time for ignoring yellows in a similar situation. So anyway, so they got on the phone or the email or the smoke signals, whatever it was, asked the FAA to take a look at it, and they actually admitted they hadn't seen the footage before that, and you know, for whatever reason, and they decided after looking at it that Lewis in fact had you know, had committed an infraction, and decided to award him. I guess that is not the correct term, but in fact to penalize him for that you know, ignoring the red the yellow flags, and when Bottas went off. So that was quite a dramatic final few moments in Q3. And honestly, I mean, we've seen over the years that whenever it's come to a situation like that, whenever Lewis needed to put that hot lap down, that that he usually goes in and nails it. But that was one really, really quick lap that that Valtteri Bottas put down in his first hot lap in Q3 to claim provisional pole, and even ignoring the yellow flags during Bottas's little escapade as a lawnmower, Lewis still wasn't able to equal that time by Valtteri Bottas. What did he miss it now by? It was like 1/200ths or 1/1500ths of a second or something like that. So very, very small and very, very close. And again, like I was saying at the top of the show, it was just one of those very, very frustrating days at the office or weekend for Lewis Hamilton for a number of reasons. And like I said, we've seen over the years that when things go contrary to plans and what Lewis expects to do over the course of a weekend, he usually comes back and really makes amends for it in his own mind and comes in and just smashes it out at the park next weekend around. And this weekend, it'll be interesting to see. I think we really will get an idea then if this championship is going to be between Hamilton and Valtteri Bottas this year. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Sticking with Mercedes, Toto Wolff says that the gloves are off in their battle with Red Bull this year. So we're going to talk in a minute about the incident between Lewis Hamilton and Alexander Albon later in the race. But anyways, Toto Wolff, obviously team principal at Mercedes-AMG Formula One, says it's a gloves-off battle with Red Bull in Formula One as they line up to do battle again this weekend at the Styrian Grand Prix. So while Mercedes did win the opening race of the year, it like I said, it was a bit of a difficult weekend after Red Bull first protested their use of the dual axis steering system, the review of Lewis Hamilton's yellow flag incident, and then they pushed them hard during the race, and then of course the coming together with Alex Albon and Lewis Hamilton at turn four, which was a similar situation to Brazil last year. Anyways, Toto was he's not pulling any punches himself, to use a bit of a boxing metaphor there. He had to say, quote, "I found that the protest on Friday was actually fair play, but not on Sunday, so I recognize that. And fair enough, if you want to have clarification, you can do that. Coming back on Sunday morning, turning around a decision on yellow flags from yesterday, if you have new evidence, that is what the rules allow. And as I said before, you have to take that on the chin. I think that in the race, putting all these things together, the Hamilton penalty was too harsh. But coming back to your questions, the gloves are off," end quote. So obviously there is you got to do whatever you can to get an advantage in Formula One. And I can completely understand that they wanted clarification on the DAS. I mean, that was that was always going to happen going back to months ago at winter testing in Barcelona, when we were all stunned to see, you know, what are Bottas and Hamilton doing? What's this pushing on, or pulling on the steering wheel? What is it actually doing? And, you know, they reveal to the world that they've, designed and created this system, and really kind of took everybody by surprise. So I think a technical challenge like that or clarification was always going to come, especially with some of the speculation coming from the stewards and from the FIA that, okay, the system in theory might be legal, but it might breach the Parc Fermé rules and things like that. So it wasn't really a surprise that was going to come. I think the real surprise for me was the actual challenge, late into the weekend after the qualifying, just that we were talking about before the break, this new footage from the official Formula One 360 cam that showed Lewis, not slowing down, going through the yellow flashing signboard. And so that was kind of interesting there. But again, I don't think that was beyond. I don't think it was unreasonable for the Red Bull to protest that. I mean, there was new evidence. It clearly supported their claim. And because it was a little bit chaotic when you're watching the TV feed, that the camera kind of jumped around a little bit because they're focusing on the car, and of course the producer has to jump very quickly when Bottas, who's obviously one of the contenders for pole position, is all of a sudden plowing through the infield and mowing down dandelions and things like that. That of course it's going to interrupt the usual flow of the feed when you get to a situation like that happening. So it was a little bit unclear at the time. Afterwards, I didn't, I'll be quite honest, after it happened in qualifying, I really didn't think too much more about it. I kind of maybe had one of those moments kind of, well, he kept going, and it didn't really strike me at the time, but then I thought, well, maybe he was further along the track, and maybe he wasn't anywhere near the yellow flags when Bottas went off. But like I said, I didn't really think too much into it at the time. So I was a little bit surprised when I woke up on Sunday morning, with the race starting just after 6 a.m. local time here on the West Coast. I think I got up at about 5:30, get the coffee ready, get a little bit of breakfast, and I'm not a morning person anyway, so I needed a good half hour to wake up to some degree of consciousness so I could enjoy the Grand Prix. And so I started going through reading some of the latest news and just checking social media and all that. When I saw that Lewis had been awarded the penalty, then it all kind of sank in rather quickly. But still, I mean, there's all these different things coming up, and Ferrari's going to be a non-factor this year unless they can really find some speed in this car and in this these upgrades that they're going to be bringing. It really could be a season that are going to be between Red Bull and Mercedes this year. So like I said, hopefully that leads to a healthy rivalry between these two teams. It could be fun on the track, especially this weekend where Red Bull and Mercedes Mercedes haven't had an out and out advantage. They've struggled there at that track at the Red Bull Ring over the past couple of years. So it'll be fun to watch again this weekend. So sticking again with Red Bull and Mercedes, Lewis says that there's no bad blood between himself and Alex Albon, despite the fact that the second time that they've had some hard racing between the two of them, and Lewis coming out on the wrong side of it in both times and being penalized for it. He said that there's no bad blood or no bad feelings between them. Lewis had to said that the circumstances were different in both races. And he said that he accepted that the reason for the incident in Brazil last year, he owned that. He said that that was his responsibility, but he thought last weekend's incident when they made contact was more of a racing incident. But I mean, after that safety car incident, I mean, after they got past start finish and then they went through turns 1, 2, and 3, I mean, Alex Albon was climbing all over the back of Lewis Hamilton's car. And I thought it was just a question of when he was going to get around him. And obviously that he'd have to do it sooner rather than later, because if they kind of got back into a bit of a rhythm, might be a little bit more difficult, especially if he had to back off for cooling issues or maybe not to overheat the tires, whatever the case may be. But I mean, it was exciting to watch that half a lap or so with Alex all climbing all over Lewis Hamilton there, but going up and over the hill there and then down into turn four, Lewis very wisely covering off the inside to line to that corner, but Alex having none of it. I mean, Lewis did leave room on the outside of the track going into that corner, and Alex Albon obviously seeing an opportunity there and trying to pass Lewis on the outside, and Lewis, he stuck to his line and he pushed through. I mean, it wasn't like the infamous Schumacher chop or something crazy we might have seen from other guys, Roman Grosjean, over the years. So, excuse me, I think I need a drink of water there. Situations where guys have not covered themselves off just done something plain foolish. Anyways, Lewis, he stuck to his line, and it was, they were side by side. But the thing was, as they came out the exit of that turn, and as they start to go down the hill and then into that little flick then to the right and then the hard left into those couple of corners there into the final sector of the track, I mean, Alex Albon was 3/4 of a car length ahead, and of course Lewis hitting Alex Albon on the right rear tire with his left front. And I agree with Lewis, it was a racing incident, but at that point I think it's fair to say that Alex he was in front. I mean, he had nowhere really he could go. Lewis, I mean, he didn't drive wide on that corner or do anything reckless. It was a racing incident, but I think it's that this one, I think the way that you're going to come down on it really, I think, is going to be maybe more on where your personal loyalties lie. Personally, I thought it was fair. And at the same time, that if they didn't give him the penalty, I could have seen a case for that as well. So anyways, Lewis did have to say, quote, "Well, firstly, I have a huge amount of respect for Alex. I think he's a super talented young man. I don't have any bad blood or bad feelings towards him whatsoever. In Brazil, he saw me coming straight to him. That for me, wholeheartedly, my mistake and my problem, I tried to face it with dignity. I think today, in my opinion, was a racing incident. He was on a much better tire. I entered the corner committed in blocking. Obviously, I was defending the position. I took the corner as normal. I had a lot of lock on to get round the corner. The track drops away when you get through the corner, so a lot of people understeer through there. However, I didn't get back on the power. I just continued to decrease my speed, and he jumped on the power, being that he had so much grip. He had a car's width to the left of him, and ultimately we touched. I think it's unfortunate we collided, and I wouldn't want ever to collide with anyone. I do think it was unfortunate, but I have to respect the decision that the stewards ended up taking. There's nothing you can say otherwise about it," end quote. Yeah, I think he's bang on. Racing incident, and Formula One, game of inches, right? And they were both pushing it to the limit. Lewis wasn't going to give an inch, obviously, and Alex pushing really hard to get by. Racing incident, no malice in it from Lewis, in my opinion, and it was just unfortunate. But like I said off the top of the show, Alex Albon, I think was probably robbed a fairly decent opportunity to win that Grand Prix, being on the fresher, softer rubber. I can't remember. I don't have my notes here anymore. I think he had the mediums at the time, and the two Mercedes cars on the older hard compound tires, what with the field nicely bunched up after spending a couple of laps behind the safety car. It was right there, wide open for Alex Albon, so obviously feeling a little bit frustrated that maybe was the one that got away from him. Anyways, Albon said he would do the same thing again in another battle with Lewis Hamilton. He said he still maintains there was enough space on the track to complete the overtake. He had to say, quote, "I think the way the corner is, let's say the exit point of where you take that corner is not where it looks like. I think there's a certain camera angle where I saw where the people say there's a car length to go still, but you don't exit there. You don't exit at that point. The exit point is a lot later in the corner because turn four is quite long. So unless I drove out to the edge of the track and then turned again, that's the only real way to give myself enough space. 100%, I would do the same thing again. I think it has to be done. You can't wait around, especially when they have a tire disadvantage and there's no waiting to be done really, because obviously we knew they had a pace advantage and it was just a matter of time until the prime tire had warmed up, so there's no real regret on my side, end quote. So yeah, good take. Good to hear points of view from both of them. Christian Horner has to weigh in as well, team principal of Red Bull, and he said that Lewis Hamilton is the one that needs to race differently in the future following his second incident with Alex Albon. And actually, when you look at it, it's the second time in three races, if you combine the last couple of races from last year with 2020. So these guys, like I said, not only do they have a history now, but it's actually quite, over a very short amount of time. Anyways, he was asked what advice he would give Alex Albon about racing head-to-head with Lewis, and Horner said, be careful. So there you go. He did have to say that he did go on to say that Alex had won the corner and was exiting, and Lewis had to stick a wheel in there, and it was frustrating for them and for Albon. And he said that he feels that Lewis has to change his approach rather than the other way around. Anyways, sticking with the Red Bull, Honda is to introduce some countermeasures after they had a double DNF in Austria last weekend. So both cars were checked and were found to be healthy and in good state after everything last weekend. So they had two issues on the car last week, and obviously Max dropping out fairly early, Alex Albon making it to several laps from the end. Anyways, Toyoharu Tanabe, who is the Honda F1 technical director, said that the issues were both the electrical with the cars caused by different reasons. He had to say, quote, we have been analyzing both of these matters together with the team, and we've put countermeasures in place for the weekend. As our power units do not have any damage caused by those issues, Max and Alex will use the same power units this weekend. This weekend, we must aim to finish the race with all four cars and achieve a good result with them. And obviously, he's referring not only to Red Bull, but AlphaTauri, used to be Toro Rosso, the B team, the Red Bull Junior team, whatever you want to call it. Anyways, Tanabe did go on to say that having two races at the same track was a good thing, and he had to finish up his thoughts saying, quote, it means our data is up to date and relevant, although one factor that could affect our work is the forecast for rain and even thunderstorms over the coming weekend, end quote. So that would be that would be great. More pandemonium, more chaos, I think would be certainly a good thing to see in the next race of the year. Let's just keep it fun, keep it exciting on the track, and let's see what happens at the Styrian Grand Prix. It's set to go, and now looking at the clock, 2 hours, 41 minutes, 24 seconds until FP1, and I start to get a little bit excited as this happens. Anyways, I'm going to take another break here. A couple more things to go before we shut it down, so don't go away, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, welcome back to the show. Still quite a lot to get through here as we work through it, all the latest news. So Mercedes admits now that the W11 design is actually causing the issues they're having with the gearbox, which was a real problem this past weekend. So their trackside engineering director, Andrew Shovlin, had to say that the gearbox problems in Austria were not a one-off issue in the race, and it's something that the team has been battling throughout the entire first race weekend of the year. Anyway, Shovlin had to say, quote, we were aware of it on Friday when you saw that Valtteri had an issue at the end of one of the sessions. So that was the first sign that we had a problem. But we've had recurrent issues over the course of Saturday and going into the race, we were expecting it because it seems to be a feature of the model. So at the moment, if we build the car and run it, this problem will appear at some point. It's a question of how soon, end quote. So he had to say that the cause of the problem is related to a buildup of electrical interference clearance within the systems in the car itself, and then it actually has an impact on the gearbox and the sensors. So anyways, he did have to say, going on further, quote, "It is not manifesting itself as one thing. It's basically a buildup of electrical noise that starts to interfere with the various systems. With Valtteri, we saw this halfway around through the race. It got progressively worse with Lewis, and it appeared later. But it's an electrical noise, then that's affecting a lot of different things," end quote. So that is interesting. That is not something that that I've heard before. And they admit that there's no quick fix for what they're calling a very complex problem to solve this gearbox issue. And it certainly could be a problem again at the Styrian Grand Prix this weekend. Head of strategy James Vols has said, "We have a number of people at the back at the factory working day and night for this. In fact, we were working in parallel to the Grand Prix. Whilst the Grand Prix was taking place, they were already doing their utmost to try and understand what the problems were to get ahead of the issue before we get into this week. We know that if we don't get on top of these issues, it will be a problem again in just a few days' time. And the reality behind it is that it is a problem that could have cost one or both cars the opportunity to finish the race on Sunday. Equally, it's a complex problem," end quote. So that is interesting, but we've seen over the years that that whenever they have an issue like that, they tend to really buckle down, throw all their resources at it, and they come back stronger than ever. Just go back, what was it, 2018, 2017 maybe, when they had a really, really bad time in Monaco, and they'd struggled actually a couple of races. They took that that break off between Monaco and then coming to Canada a couple of weeks later. And then it was a completely different Mercedes, and they just went on from there. Anyways, Valtteri Bottas revealed why he slowed down at the end of the race last weekend, and he said it wasn't an attempt to back Lewis into the pack at the race there. And Valtteri did say that the reason why he'd slowed down and was actually 2.5 seconds off the pace was he's just kind of saving everything for a last lap attack to get the fastest lap of the race, and then also that single point for the both the bonus that they give out now. Anyways, Ola Källenius, CEO of Mercedes, has basically put to rest any talk of an internal feud with Toto Wolff, and said that quote, "Well, not everything you read in the media is true. Toto and I are very close. We speak quite often, and I'm very happy to be here and support the team after all the hard work that they have done over the winter," end quote. So there you go. The vague but somewhat maybe revealing comment. So who knows? Anyways, so just talking now about I mentioned it briefly at the beginning of the show, just about or earlier in the show about Lewis's contract situation with Mercedes. Obviously, he doesn't have a contract in place. Anyways, Toto was dismissed what he calls nonsense speculation that Mercedes are just flat out unwilling to meet Lewis's salary demands, and that they actually haven't had any discussions about money. So anyways, apparently Hamilton said, or this was in the Daily Mail newspaper last Friday, saying that Lewis wants £40 million a year. And apparently in the report, it said that Toto had set a limit of roughly half that amount, so £20 million a year, which is still a lot of money. Anyways, Toto had to go on and say to the media, "Stop making shit up," end quote. So there you go. I don't know how you can deny it any more emphatically than that. Anyways, it's been a long time in the show so far before we get to Ferrari, but Sebastian Vettel says that the SF1000 was unrecognizable in the Grand Prix on Saturday compared to earlier in the weekend, when he was actually quite encouraged by the way that the car was handling. My goodness, a bit of a slip there. Anyways, when he was talking on Monday night, he said, quote, "Since I spend time between the races here, I took advantage of the sunshine. I was on the mountain. I cleared my head. It was good to be out in the fresh air today. Nobody was on the mountain. I was alone and had time for myself. This feels good in this situation. The speed was simply missing. We are still looking. There are maybe two or three things that are not quite ideal. The car was unrecognizable to the feeling I had on Friday. So all in all, it wasn't a good day with me," end quote. quote. Anyways, when he was asked about the coming together that he had with Carlos Sainz at turn three, while Sainz was actually dicing with a teammate Charles Leclerc after the restart after the safety car, Vettel had to say, quote, "It wasn't supposed to be an attack. I just wanted to be as close as possible. The two of them were fighting a bit. I didn't expect Carlos to move in at the last minute. It's my fault. I didn't want to touch him. And then I dropped the anchor and locked the rear wheels. For not having a handbrake, I think I did a good job, but of course it was not intentional to turn the car around. I was very annoyed about it. In retrospect, I can describe the situation as I saw it from the cockpit, but still, it must not happen. This is an absolute no-go. Without it, I would have had much better chances," end quote. Yeah, it wasn't really the best thing for Sebastian in that race. Dropped him down basically to the back of the pack, and then only finishing P10 for a single point by the time it was all over. Anyway, so apparently Ferrari losing 0.7 of a second per lap on the straights, and they looked really slow. They looked really vulnerable, and it really does make you wonder now what's the that secret FIA ruling on the Ferrari power unit was last year. Of course, they haven't revealed what the issues were. I mean, this keeps popping up even as recently as last week. Again, it really makes you wonder what the deal was, because their straight line speed was one of their strong points last year, and this past weekend especially not looking good. And if you look to what the disadvantage was, it was obvious without even taking some times on it. Anyways, Matteo Binotto, team principal of Ferrari, had to say, quote, "We need to improve our car as there are some miscorrelations with the design, the car behavior, and especially on the aero. That's a development we have started again coming back from the lockdown, and hopefully we will have very soon at the racetrack. It will not be the final solution. There is no silver bullet. What is important for us to improve those types of behaviors," end quote. So yeah, they got a lot of work to do. They've decided to bring forward some of the updates that they can for the Styrian Grand Prix this weekend. They were originally going to introduce them in Hungary in a couple of weeks' time. Hungarian Grand Prix is set for the middle of the month next weekend, from the 16th to the 19th of July, but they've pushed that forward to try and get everything on the car for the Styrian Grand Prix this weekend rather than next weekend. At the very least, they're going to have some of the updates available. And so they've been working flat out at Maranello to get this done and completed and onto the car this weekend. So we'll wait and see whether or not they're able to do that. But certainly Ferrari needs something, because I don't think they look like they were one of the top three team last weekend. To me, they even looked like they were a step behind McLaren and Racing Point, who looked very strong as well. Anyways, Ferrari's actually calling this Styrian Grand Prix, the second race at the Red Bull Ring this weekend, a massive opportunity to test their upgrades. Sebastian Vettel had to say, quote, "We don't know how long the season will be, but for sure it will be a good indication for us to see if it's in the right direction for us or not. I think you will always have certain expectations, but the best answer is a stopwatch when you get on the track. Obviously, is one what we feel. The other one is the times we are clocking. So we are excited about, and obviously interesting to see the direct comparison to last weekend where we'll end up. I think it's a massive opportunity for us to have the race held at exactly the same place. So I hope we will get some answers," end quote. So yeah, we'll see what they bring. And they do have an upgraded front wing as part of one of the updates. And it'll be interesting to see by the time, tomorrow morning when I get up for work, whether or not they've had a good running, excuse me, in FP1 or not. Now, sticking with Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel is challenging Ferrari's claim over the descriptions over their contract decision to let him go at the end of this year. And he's really countering and calling out Matteo Binotto's stance that it was the COVID-19 crisis that was the trigger for his change of heart or philosophy that decided him not to renew his contract. Anyways, Binotto said before the Austrian Grand Prix that while Vettel was their first choice, the pandemic made them decide to change their preferences. And anyways, Sebastian had to say, quote, "Yes, that's what I said. I think that the last 5 years haven't brought what I think was the goal from both sides. Still, I think that it would have been an option to continue and work on that goal in any case. And that had been communicated in the same way. I was told we want to continue until I got a phone call out of nowhere when I was told that there would be no offer, that there would be no future. That surprised me at first, the conditions with Corona and so on. I don't want to harp on about it now. I don't think they'll be that decisive. There were also some reports that we could not agree on the financial aspects. So that was not an issue at all and would not have been an issue. If you have been in Formula One for so long, you've been lucky enough to be so successful and then on the other hand, gain a certain independence, that certainly would not have been an obstacle, which is why it was surprising. But well, at the decision as it is, I don't have a problem with it and it's accepted as it is, but I am still trying to do my job this year and do a better job yet than yesterday and do the best for the team to bring this to a good end," end quote. So interesting. Just had a feeling at the time that just how it came down out of nowhere and it was kind of like the mutual decision to part ways. I just had a feeling something was going to shake out over time. And it really is interesting to hear, Sebastian, explain it from his point of view. But Mark Webber, a former teammate of Sebastian Vettel, says he says in his mind that the marriage, as he called it, between Ferrari and Sebastian is over and done with. And he feels that that Seb's exit from the Scuderia can't come fast enough. So he was talking in the Fastlane podcast. He had to say, quote, "The relationship is over. The chemistry is gone. The marriage is over. Sebastian is dressed in red. He's driving a red car, but he's there for himself. In some scenarios, you wish it could be over now because that's pretty much how it's looking. From a dynamic perspective, I think Sebastian was empty after the race. I think the Seb scenarios, the sooner that's over, the better for everyone concerned," end quote. And, contrast that with the opinion and thoughts of another former teammate, and that's Alfa Romeo's Kimi Raikkonen. Of course, Seb and Kimi were teammates at Ferrari for several years until the end of 2018. Of course, Charles Leclerc got bumped up to Ferrari last year. Anyways, Kimi, he's got a bit of doubt between some of the reports that the relationship between Seb and Ferrari has completely gone off, and he said that he is certain that the team will give him equal treatment to Charles Leclerc. Anyways, Sebastian did go on to say that he would go back to Red Bull if he was offered a Formula One deal to go back there. That would be very, very interesting. And Seb did have to say, quote, or when he was asked about, he did have talks with Renault Overdrive, but it didn't really get to a real advanced stage. But he had to say, quote, "Yes, I did, but it obviously at no point concrete enough or fundamental talks or real talks. As you've seen as well, they've gone in a different direction. It doesn't change much for me. It really depends on my decision, which I'm not pressured to take in the next couple of days. I will take the time that I need to decide," end quote. Anyways, when he was asked what he would like to do, and he said that everything is an option at the moment, and that includes the options of carrying on in Formula One, take a sabbatical, or just flat out retire. But he says he's still got a lot of motivation to stay in Formula One with a competitive team and wants to do more in the sport. And he just flat out said, "It's not a secret that I am competitive," end quote. So he did say that he would be open to going back to Red Bull. I mean, we're seeing that's kind of the thing to do with some drivers that have been around for a while, like Fernando Alonso. Go back where it all started from. Which is kind of cool, but anyways, we will see whether or not that happens. Red Bull obviously in a pretty good place with Max Verstappen. Obviously, looks like a potential Formula One world champion at some point, and then also Alex Albon going to be a driver to watch this year as well. See what he can do in a full season with Red Bull. And then finally, as we wrap it up here, Mugello is looking more and more like to be a lock into the next round of races for this year. And it's looking like it might be given the weekend of September 13th to at least maybe get on the calendar following the last of the European races at Spa and Monza at the end of August, and then the first weekend in September. So we'd have a 3-week triple header, which would be kind of close. And anyways, we're also looking like we're going to have the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi confirmed in the original date of September 27th. And even though the organizers have begun to advertise ticket sales after putting them on hold in the past, and it was and supposedly could be one of the races that could be one of the first races this year that might allow spectators to attend on some level. So we'll wait and see. Anyways, it's looking more and more likely that the Canadian Grand Prix might not take place after the Russian Grand Prix. So weather conditions meant that early October was the only realistic window to run the Canadian Grand Prix in Montreal. And now perhaps Portimão in Portugal might get that weekend instead. Even though there's still a lot of doubt going on there, it looks like we might have a Chinese and Vietnamese Grand Prix at some point in the fall, with possible dates being given to the revised calendar sometime in late October. And that would be kind of cool, because I mean, Vietnam was something I was looking forward to with the new track in Hanoi. Obviously, that was called off what with the pandemic situation. Vietnam has done fairly good in the whole COVID situation, and it would be great to see if we could get back there in China as well, if things continue to go well there as well. Anyways, that's I think that's about it. It's starting to get late here. I'm starting to get sleepy. I got time to ahead of me to process this and get it out for download. But hey, that's part of the fun of doing what I do. Anyways, thank you so much, as always, for downloading and listening to the show. Thank you for your messages, your comments, and your thoughts. If you want to get in touch, please do so. Send me an email at scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com or tweet me at scuderiaf1pod. And if you like the show, best way to support us is go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you download and listen to podcasts, and leave us a 5-star rating and a review, because it really does help. Anyways, that's it. That's a wrap for this show. Enjoy the Styrian Grand Prix. We'll be back soon enough to break that one down and see what goes on at the Red Bull Ring, and as we get the season up and running in earnest. So we'll look forward to it. So enjoy the race this weekend, and we'll talk again soon. Bye for now. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.